Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical anti-capitalist approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 76th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Today we have part two of Tarot for Adapting to a Post-Pandemic World Approaching Climate Collapse with Sanyu Estelle. And I just want to say thank you to everyone that tuned in for the last episode, for the feedback. I think it was the most that the show has been listened to in the first couple day period, so it was nice to know people were excited for the podcast to come back. That was definitely a warm welcome for me back from sabbatical. So I hope you enjoyed this segment as well, like part two of our discussion. And if you do, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. It means a lot in terms of support for the show. You can also watch the full video because I cut out a little bit, but most of it's still in this episode of Sanyu and I talking and the full almost 2 hour discussion that we had. So you can see that if you join the Patreon at $5 or more per month. There's also, I'm doing a full moon collective reading tonight, actually, but it's going to be like 2 hours after this episode's released. So you might not have time to make it, but you can watch the playback because each month around the full moon, I do have a collective reading. And at the $10 level, you know, we're doing tarot talks now, and we just had the first one. It was really cute. And we did like a really amazing reading together as a group with the folks that showed up. So I love gathering in Zoom space, but I'm not teaching anything live. I almost said this semester. That's funny. During this season. And I miss it. So it's really good to have the tarot space, the tarot talk space. So check that out if you're interested. And it's a really great way to support the show, keep the show going. So thanks, y'all, for helping out if you're already on there. I did want to give a couple of updates. I want to get really quickly into this episode because this is about an hour more of our conversation. But Tarot School for Liberation is coming back next month. My tentative launch date right now is October 10th, 10/10. So I'm going to see what I can do. And it's going to be a little different this time because I'm working on doing a lot more material, a lot more worksheets and activities. And it's actually going to be a self-paced online class from now on, which I think works better now for a lot of people with their work schedules, with their caregiving and family schedules. So I'm excited to make it accessible to more people. I do love gathering in Zoom space or even more so in real life space for workshops, but that isn't always possible. And I do hope to do the advanced class / second session for returning students again in the winter. But things have just been slow going because I'm coming back from a time. So stay tuned for that. Sign up for the mailing list. That's where the best place. If you can't sign up for the Patreon, signing up for the mailing list is the best place to get these updates. The other update is some of you may have read my personal zine. I have the Rise Up Plant Witch zine, Rise Up Good Plant Witches zine that I do with the Plant Witch Mentorship Circle. But I actually have a personal zine called No Maidens, No Mothers. I did the first issue last year right before the pandemic, and I had planned that year to do 4 issues that year because I really wanted to focus on my narrative writing. That didn't happen because, you know, a lot of things changed in the world and like priorities shifted and there was a need to put my energy somewhere else besides writing about my perspective. But I finally, after a lot of reflection, was able to put together No Maidens, No Mothers, issue 2. It's full color. It's full of my analog photographs and a lot of writing, personal narrative, protection magic, witchcraft for healing, complex trauma, etc. So I hope you'll check it out. Pre-orders are going to start this week. So I'm going to base how many I have printed based on pre-orders. So if you know you'll be interested, they're going to be mailed out the first week of October. So check the Witch Shop out tomorrow. I'll have a link in the profile or in the show notes. And you can do a pre-order for No Maidens, No Mothers, Volume 2. So definitely check out Sonyu's offerings. It seems like she has a lot going on this season. We're also talking about perhaps offering something together in the near future, maybe. So keep your ears open, not peeled. I don't know the expression. And yeah, I'm feeling really hopeful and grateful right now. It's the eve of the Pisces full moon right now, and I'm thinking a lot just about illusions and perceptions and the ways that we're able to claim liberation when we are able to recognize our own patterns and like look at the way that we have been indoctrinated in certain ways that don't serve us. Let me know what you think. You know what? Your feedback is always appreciated. What do you think of this episode? How does it resonate with you? What are you feeling about using tarot for adapting to these times that we're in? Sending y'all so much love. Thank you again for all of your support. Is the Ten of Pentacles in the eighth house tarot. It's Ten of Earth and it's Mercury in Virgo. So we've got some Mercury again. In Virgo, we think about practicality and sustainability and body related and physical presence related types of ways of looking at things and communicating and being so like very somatic, you know. I think Mercury and Virgo is like a very somatic way of communicating. So what I think about the Ten of Pentacles, and this is something I like talk about with my students a lot, is this idea of like generational wealth and how it's sort of, you know, in a capitalist, white supremacist, colonial framework, generational wealth is about protecting those closest to you. And that's it. Like, it's sort of like, you know, there was a documentary that came out when I was in college, like a million years ago, like literally all like, yeah, like 15 years ago or something. It was about Walmart and about the Waltons and how I remember the thing that really stood out to me in that documentary was about how the Waltons, you know, they were at the time like the richest people in the world. They were paying all their employees minimum wage and then not giving them enough hours so that they could get health insurance. So like the employees were like, you know, and they were only promoting white men. Basically, like this whole documentary was just like tearing a new one to the Waltons. It actually really affected them. They actually did some changes. But one of the things that stood out to me is that while they were doing all this environmental degradation and destruction to keep themselves rich, they were also building themselves underground bomb shelter houses in case we go to war and or have climate apocalypse, both of which are likely, you know, climate apocalypse definitely, or another story.
Already.
Yeah. Yeah. So all around. They were investing their money in building underground shelters for them with like 500, you know, like 50 years of food or something, dry food, instead of like paying their workers like a living wage. And to me, that is like the most corrupt, the most shadow of the Ten of Pentacles. It's about supplying for you and yours and being like everyone else is on their own. That is what we've, you know, become, you know, in late capitalism, as, you know, collectively as a nation. And yet that is so not what the Ten of Pentacles is about. You know, we see in the Pentacles, unlike the Swords, where like the further on in the suit, it's like more burdensome. And then you get to the Ten and you're like, which I thought you were going to talk about that today. Because I have like so many references in my cards to like Ten of Pentacles stuff or Ten of Swords kind of energy. But with Ten of Pentacles, we see, you know, in the Smith-Rider-Waite, there's the Elder. There's like the two like mothering figures, and then there's like the children and the dogs. So what I see with that is like intergenerational wealth that is not about hoarding wealth. It is about sustainability. So what I always think about is the seven generation model. And I did like a little bit of
research. I'm not, you know, super educated. The Haudenosaunee, I think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, the Haudenosaunee people of the Longhouse from what's now called upstate New York in Canada, what much of the so-called U.S. government was modeled off of their methodologies. And what the idea was, you always do everything with three generations before and three generations after in mind. And that's like obviously an attitude that we do not have now. You know, we don't have that like the way, and I think that's kind of like the okay boomer thing, you know, the idea of like American history was so great and how a lot of like white baby boomers hold on to this. And even like, you know, younger people as well, hold on to this idea of like America is so great. Whereas this is actually a result of like a large cultural gaslighting and cognitive dissonance, where the truth sometimes is so painful that you can't actually see it, so you avoid it. Again, that comes up with Six of Swords also, I think. But I think with the Ten of Pentacles, what we look at it is like, what am I doing for myself that will therefore benefit those around me? And sometimes that's just like doing your own self-care, you know, like sometimes that's just like trying to show up better in spaces for those around you. But when I think about Ten of Pentacles, I definitely think of this idea of, you know, like ancestral connection, not only connection to blood family, connection to communities, and just like the awareness of like what we do, it holds a legacy, you know. And what I love about a lot of your work, and like, you're very generous, like, you know, I haven't been on Instagram in a while, but like, you're very generous with like your own familial legacy. And that, you know, I was thinking about that when you were talking, you know, about the aftermath of grief and like filling the space with someone that is missing from your life that, you know, you're still like figuring out how to utilize that space. Like that is the honor, you know, because the seeds that you plant in that space, like the way that you honor that space is how it grows. So it really does leave that opportunity when someone passes, when someone moves on, to be like, how do we cultivate life in this person's honor, instead of just bulldozing everything and being like, gotta get back to work, my 401k, et cetera, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I love so much about that. And also, yeah, of course, I mean, I always love the Ten of Swords. I feel like the Ten of Swords is a card, and maybe that's just the thing about tens, that like they're applicable in any situation. Because I'm actually looking at my cards and like, wow, I didn't pick any pentacles. Mm-hmm. Which is surprising, because one would think, you know, we're talking about climate collapse, we're talking about what we thought would be a post-pandemic, we're talking about very earthbound issues, and yet I guess I didn't choose any pentacles because I am recognizing the aspect of all of this that is so that has nothing to do with earth, other than that we're making it have to do, you're like, we're instigating this situation on our parent planet. And so I guess I'll just do my other minor arcana, because we're talking minor arcana. I chose the Seven of Chalices, Seven of Cups. And I chose it, and I was kind of surprised, because when I got your email, sometimes when you send me an email, I'll just sit in that moment and think what comes to me immediately, you know, before I have any time. And I thought Six of Swords, and then I thought Seven of Chalices, and then everything else that came to me other than the Ten of Swords was Major Arcana. But I chose the Seven of Chalices because I think it's very much, well, one, just like cups, our emotions, emotional intelligence. I always say in my readings, emotional intelligence is a four-step process. Step one is you feel away. Step two is you recognize you feel away. Step three is recognizing that you feel away. You actually look back on your personal history and think of all the times that you might have felt that way, or all the people who might have helped you feel that way, and all the ways you've behaved as a result of feeling that way. And then step four, after that review, you act. But I always like to tell people, you know, in a white cis heteropatriarchal world, it's just steps one and four. I feel I act, which creates rage. You know, it's like, I'm just punk life. And all the rich accountability that comes from recognizing how we feel and reviewing how we ended up feeling that way is what allows us to actually be emotionally intelligent and at peace, or at least neutrality with our emotional circumstances. So I always like cups, because even though when it comes up, a lot of people are like, oh, romance or one-on-one relationships or creativity or my purpose. Whenever I see the cups, I think about emotional intelligence. And I like the Seven of Cups for how we, you know, survive or thrive through a pandemic and climate collapse, because it's very much a card about choices. It's very much a card about like what is presented to you and what you're, what choice you're going to make. In fact, in the Numinous Tarot by Cedar, they have a gender nonconforming deck, which I really enjoy, and their cups are vials. But what I really like about their Seven of Cups for the viewers who are watching is that it's an apothecary. And the individual is just looking at all the different kinds of bottles and making a making an assessment about what they actually need for the moment, for the healing, for the circumstances. And I've always really liked that about the Seven of Cups, like even in Menzel's, it's like someone's always sitting in contemplation, considering their options. And then of course, in the traditional tarot, it's more like in the clouds, you know, but like take your choice now. And then what I love about it is that each cup has a different sort of outcome in it, especially in like, this is the herbal tarot, which I know you have, but I always liked in this one, there's like a dragon and a heart and a castle and like a theater mask. And you're like, okay, well, how, I think the Seven of Cups along with the Major Arcana cards is the thing that keeps people, it's like the story that we tell about why we are fighting. You know, it's like the thing that you put your kid to bed with during post-apocalyptic times or during scary times to help them sleep, to make sense of the horror. It's very like life is beautiful to me. Like that whole movie is about a father trying to preserve his child's innocence in the worst of circumstances and saying to himself, okay, I have to deal with this reality, but like my child does not have to deal with this reality if I can help it. And so with the Seven of Cups, it feels like the adult's card in this circumstance, like the grown-up card, the elder card, because it's the, because you, that at that age or at that position in society, you are more capable of perceiving the potentialities and the options. You're not necessarily responsible for bringing all the cups, because I think that children and youth are very informative about these things, but you're the one who ultimately is going to decide which chalice is chosen. And then like the last image it always brings to me, of course, is Indiana Jones, which I think is like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I could think where he's supposed to pick Jesus's cup. And the challenge is that there's all these cups in the room and some of them look like gold and silver, and people make all these assumptions like, you know, Jesus would only drink out of the best, you know, it's Son of God, whatever. And Jesus has the shittiest cup in the room.
Yeah.
And it's all about perception. It's all about what you've actually learned from the history that you have accepted as canon. And some people believe the Roman Catholic history of Jesus, and some people actually read the book and they realized that he was born in a manger. So his parents were broke. And I think that that is kind of what I like about the Seven of Cups. It's about lore. It's about options. It's about what we think of as choices. And it's, there's hope, but it's also, based on the preferences of the individual in the driver's seat, which for each of us is our own life. So it's like all the choices that we make up to the climax or up to the goal point that we imagine we're trying to get to, and whether we actually chose the tools that we needed. So I kind of like the Seven of Cups because I don't think of cups as a very neutral suit. But I think that the Seven of Cups, unlike like the Seven of Swords, I mean, unlike the Seven of Swords or even the Seven of Pentacles, which Seven of Swords seems kind of negative. Seven of Pentacles is kind of positive. Seven of Wands, I read it both ways. But the Seven of Cups is kind of like, well, what are you going to make out of it? And I think a lot of us are asking ourselves that question because before COVID, a lot of people were like, this is all it can be. What do you mean? It's this or it's collapse. It's this or it's anarchy. And then you get into the collapse and people are like, whoa, we don't have any more options. Wait. I mean, and I wrote an article about this, which is like, you know, everybody wants a revolution until there's blood in your fucking water and you don't know where the next meal is coming from. And the land that's being bombed is the one that you have to live on and breathe and eat from. And then you're like, wait, I don't know if this was such a good idea, because ultimately I mean, and you haven't been on an IG, so we haven't had these conversations, but like, I've been thinking about the Audre Lorde quote, you know, that people love to use, the master's tools will not dissemble the master's house. I'm probably butchering that quote, but it's like that. And I think I think the way that Audre Lorde meant it makes complete sense. I think the way that people continue to use it doesn't make as much sense, because first of all, what I wrote in my post is like, first of all, who are we calling master? Because I'm not just going to call anyone master, okay? And then second of all, if we're talking about it in the context that people like to use it, which is like white supremacy is never going to deconstruct white supremacy, I'm like, the irony is that it is. Because you're assuming that white supremacy is mastery over race or intellect. It's mastery over delusion. So the paradox is that when you're a master of delusion, you deconstruct your house because that's what you're mastered at what's confusing and doesn't make sense. And so we see, whether it's patriarchy or white supremacy or classism of any kind, including like environmental classism, it deconstructs the ability for humanity to sustain itself. So whatever, maybe it's mastery of limitation or mastery of hatred or mastery of delusion, but like that kind of mastery does deconstruct its own house. And that's the kind of situation that we're in when we are in a Seven of Cups situation, when we're like, okay, I'm dreaming of the future and what future is possible. And oftentimes we're in a state where we're like, oh, you know, out of all the histories that we've had, this one seems like the most sustainable. And yet that's the house we're inheriting. So I like the Seven of Cups because it's usually outside. It's usually denoting like a breaking away from tradition. And yet it's pregnant with options because we don't yet know what this person thinks, like, where humanity should go. And I think that's true of all of us. Like no one person has the answer of like the perfect society. And when people suggest that they do, like when Akana's like, this is the only way that you can be free, I'm like, you're on that polarity situation. You're doing something else, because this card is about multidimensionality. It's about options. It's not about the binary at all. But we do fixate and think it is, simply because in a capitalist framework, it has to be vertically hierarchical as opposed to horizontally. I was like, what direction goes out? The hot dog way. So yeah, that's why I chose this.
The hamburger.
Yes. Yes, the hamburger way, yes.
Thank you. That was amazing. And I feel like, so I'm going to talk, it's funny because you're talking about the Seven of Cups. We kind of touched on the Seven of Swords. And I'm going to talk about the other two sevens. But I, you know, that I'm totally going to like look at your Instagram and read that post, because that's interesting. I love that Audre Lorde quote. You know, I want to hear what you have to say about it. I feel like people use that quote to be like, I don't know. I think people, yeah, I could see what you mean. I'm curious to what you say, what you wrote about how they use that quote out of context. And I think also like for me, and I won't get into this like in great detail, but for me as someone who has been like studying anarchism for a long time, but was like hesitant to call myself that for a long time, because I was like, well, I don't have it all figured out. And like, I can't perfectly explain it. And then I was like, well, I couldn't explain, you know, how many people that are capitalists can explain why they're, you know, so I feel like that is a real thing to look at, is like, yeah, you know, I would love to see the system as it is collapse, but then we have to look at the fact, like, who has the guns, you know, who has the land, who has the resources, what are they going to do with the system as it is collapses? I think about that with, like, you know, friends that I have doing a lot of organizing in communities that are actually working to defund the police. I think, like, you know, a lot of the rural areas, you know, rural areas in the Pacific Northwest are, have long standing histories of, like, white supremacy. So, but then they also have, like, long standing history of, like, radical anti-capitalist thinking as well. And what happens when these two things clash? And I think that's what we saw in Portland last year a lot, is like these two extreme sides clashing. And then it's like, we have to have systems figured out, like, it, you know, and that goes back to, like, my feeling on the Knight of Wands, who's not considering those things and is just like, yeah, revolution. And, like, it's like, who's going to be harmed by a revolution? Like, who is going to be harmed by a revolution? Who's going to suffer? And, but then, like, who's suffering in the current system? You know, like, it's kind of the same. But anyway, yeah, that's super interesting. I'm going to move on to Seven of Pentacles.
Lovely.
So
seems like such a hopeful card for.
And I think Seven of Cups is helpful. So Seven of Earth, Saturn in Taurus, which I love that. I wonder what's going to happen when we move into that transit in a couple of years, Saturn in Taurus, because we think about, like, the Earth-based energy, the self-care related energy, the sexual energy of Taurus with this, like, structure and rule-based identity of, like, Saturn. And when I think
relationship reformation, that's what I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the change, and that'll be interesting for, like, the lover's year too, like, next year being the lover's year. And I think with, like, the Seven of Pentacles, a few things you said in the beginning reminded me of this, about grief and making space, because one of the reasons that I love, like, I do think Seven of Pentacles is very pertinent to this, like, quote unquote, post pandemic world, like, climate collapse world. Seven of Pentacles is important because we have to assess what our priorities and needs are and what we have the capacity. So again, kind of like, maybe, like, I'm in star thinking mode. But I relate to Seven of Pentacles in two ways. One, as a gardener and an herbalist, because we think about relationship to the land and being realistic with our crops and our harvest. But I also think of it as someone with a research background, because in research, you take time, you know, to collect data, and then you go into the assessment. And when you go into an assessment, or when you're doing a harvest, you have to be realistic with yourself about what's working, what's not working, what is yielding a crop and what is not. Maybe you had big ideas about what you wanted to do. You know, again, Pentacles is about being practical. It's about being earth-based. It's about being, you know, in the material world to some extent. So with the Seven of Pentacles, I think about, you know, again, with, like, grief, this idea of, like, losing someone or something, or losing even, like, an opportunity or, like, an outlook, which a lot of us are doing right now in this time, is just, like, our expectations for our own lives are having to change based on, like, what we're dealing with collectively. The Seven of Pentacles is there to be like, so the places where things aren't working, it's time for you to tear that out, tear out what's dead, you know, tear out what's not bringing you life, and think about planting new seeds in that place. So when I think about Seven of Pentacles, I think, like, adapting to climate change, for example. It's like, I've been thinking about a lot, like, water. You know, I've been doing a lot of research about compost toileting, have, like, done, you know, on the property I live on, have done some of that, like, in my van life, have done some of that. And, like, the idea of, like, compost toilets, the idea of just, like, composting rainwater catchment systems, like, irrigation systems that are sustainable, and, like, the way that on a larger scale, our society, you know, there's a lot of data out there about water waste, and, like, you know, there's a drought, we're in extreme drought, you know, and I saw that in my travels this year, like, just looking at these forests that are clearly very dehydrated, like, and very dry, and then, like, you know, very susceptible to the fires that are on their way. So it's like looking at, you know, the way that we sustain water, the way that we sustain resources, like, what are our food supplies looking like, and how we are in a time where, again, we're talking cognitive dissonance and sort of this idea of, like, people having a disconnect between, like, understanding, like, the realities that we're facing and, like, wanting to continue to live how they've always lived. But, like, the Seven of Pentacles, to me, it really calls in this idea of, like, having to get real with yourself and assess what it is that you're capable of, what you have access to, and how it needs to change based on like what's around you changing. And I forgot to say flower essences for 10 of Pentacles. That I said any, you know, 10 of Pentacles essence, I think anything that is related to your ancestry. So like, I, you know, worked with olive essence because of my Mediterranean ancestors, also Angelica essence. And then for the seven, I think clematis and then tansy, because we're thinking about focusing, bringing attention to getting clear about like what we want. And I think also, cause we're talking about sevens, like seven is the you know, the card of like an assessment, a process, an initiation, a choice. It is kind of like the card of like slowing down and looking at what's around you and like deciding what you want, where you want to go next. There's a lot of like open doors when you get to a seven.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whatever way you want to take that, whether you want to go the Seven of Swords way or the Seven of Pentacles way. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So the first major that I'll just talk about the majors in the order that they come up, but I chose the Fool. I think in a pandemic and in climate collapse, you don't get there without the Fool. That's for sure. And the Fool starts all of our journeys. Something I wrote recently is that, you know, when we say like the cards that were dealt by the universe, the trick in that statement is that everyone has dealt all the cards, right? We all get the tarot deck. We all start with the Fool. The order of the cards from there is completely contingent upon who we are as people and our preferences. You know, some people go from the Fool straight to Swords. Some people go from the Fool to Pentacles. Some people go from the Fool to the Devil, to the Hierophant, to the Emperor. And that it just depends on your journey. Mm-hmm. And so we all are the Fool. The human journey is a Fool's journey, but the elevated Fool is the one who gives everything that they have to the present moment. And so they don't have to worry about the future because they know they give everything they have to the present moment, and they don't have to worry about the past because they know they gave everything they had to the present moment. And so there's a real concentration of knowledge in that, that sort of faith, with etymology of faith, meaning to trust, to confide, to persuade, is true faith. Where, you know, if you trust, then there's nothing to doubt. If you're confident, then there's nothing to be insecure about. If you're persuaded, then what else is there to say? So with the Fool, when the Fool is actually in neutrality and alignment, the Fool is living that their life without assumption and without expectation, and making no promises to anybody other than I'll show up on the day and we'll see what happens. And I think that that sort of regenerative quality is really necessary in any sort of collapse and in any sort of, you know, health crises. People have to have the ability to show up fresh. And we find that, you know, through history, you have to find your regeneration somewhere or the fight is actually lost. And, you know, the moment that faith goes out the building or confidence in living, people become really desperate. And, you know, this is where we see, you know, all the terror. This is where Walking Dead comes in and you're like, are the zombies more dangerous than the people? I don't know. And that's the politics of the show, which is like, are the circumstances what make you dangerous or are your choices what make you dangerous and or make things dangerous? And I appreciate the Fool because if you can master that journey, you almost have nothing to worry about. Like, there literally is nothing for you to worry about because the mastery of that journey is I show up every day, I give everything that I have, I sleep peacefully, and I wake up and I do it all again. And so there is a emotional honesty in the Fool that I think is really cool to start out tarot with and to start out the journey of the archetypes, the human archetypes with. And it's just necessary to have people who keep don't know mind. So the fool is also like children, right? You can be anything you want to be. You can do anything you want to do. And then they become an adult and they're like, what kind of crackpot idea is that? Who told you that? And you're like, y'all told me that when I was a kid. And, but we need that energy. Mm-hmm. We need a generation that's going to come with neutrality at the very least, and with hope and positivity for what can be done with the time in front of them, which is now. And I think that's what Gen Z is here to sort of educate us about. Like, God only knows what Gen A, do they go to A after Z? I don't know. So God only knows what Gen A is going to do, because they're growing up in the evidence, the unequivocal evidence of human and climate collapse, but or humans sustaining climate collapse. And so that energy, that naivete, that fresh perspective is both what can keep you alive and get you killed, but you need it either way. And so there's no going on the tarot journey without the fool. You need the fool. You need to have those moments of legitimately not knowing. And it's we talk all those things in the swords that make us resentful of the journey, right? Like the whole idea of supremacy ideation in a patriarchal classist world is like, if I don't intend for this ahead of time, and if I don't supply all these resources, like, right, these Walmart people, they're like, I don't know if I want to live with these people, but if I am, I'm going to do it in a bunker. You know, like all this preparing for the worst, assuming the worst of yourself and of others and of humanity and of the, and even of the environment, mm-hmm. is how we got here. Whereas if every day we woke up and we're like, well, let's see what we do with what the day is, as opposed to being like, this is just the way things are, we would live in a much less predictable world, but it also might be less predictably negative. Mm. And I think that that's kind of the magic and the bomb, B-A-L-M, also though B-O-M-B, depending on the kind of fool you have, that the fool offers, especially as a starting point. Like, you can't help, like, we're in a new unprecedented situation for our times, right? Like, we're not the people of Pompeii, we're not the people of the Roman Empire collapse, we're not the people of the, you know, Aztec and Maya collapse. So the way that we deal with this is new because we're in it for the first time ourselves, and we have to respect that. You know, we're not going to have all the answers, and we're also going to likely fuck things up, but we're going to succeed as well along the way, because all of those things are available to the fool's journey. Mm-hmm. We just don't appreciate how volatile that knowledge is. Because we think that knowledge should come in some sort of like orderly, predictable, accessible manner. Mm-hmm. But all the other cards in the tarot suggest that that's not how knowledge comes in. And the fool starts you off on that at zero, you know? So that's why I like it for this.
That makes a lot of sense. What kind of fool are you gonna be in this coming time? Yeah. It's funny, because like, I was like, oh, I'll go next to Seven of Wands because we're doing seven, but then I also, my last card is Judgment. And I feel like a lot of judgment ties into the fool. So maybe I'll go with Judgment. And Judgment, of course, many know that know about like astrology, is Pluto, my favorite planet ever. So I thought about Judgment because it's, you know, sort of like what you're, a lot of related to what you're saying about the fool. It's like Judgment is a 10. So it is a 10, you know, it's not always classified as a 10, but since it's 20, you know, it reduces down to 10. So we think about it in that energy of finality. But Judgment is this energy of like, okay, if you want to start this new chapter, what exactly do you want to bring into the new chapter? And what do you want to leave behind? So I think about, again, like accountability, making amends, a deep reflection, a mirror holding up to ourselves, a reminder that we can change the future by making peace with the past. And It's also sort of like a what goes around comes around card. So again, it's sort of like when I think of judgment, and I think of this as like Pluto, our Pluto placements in astrology tell us where kind of our shadows lie, where the hidden parts, you know, where is it that we struggle in a way that we don't really want other people to see, you know, where we don't, like our shadow self is sort of like, you know, a lot of times we want to hide it because our shadow self is often the one that's not acceptable in like mainstream society, or even it's a part of us that could be harmful to other people or to ourselves. So we want to like cloak the shadow self in a lot of ways. But the thing is, I think the power is bringing that out and like showing what it is and healing it and knowing it well. Because my belief is that if you don't know what your shadow side is, it's going to rule your life. It's going to control you. And if you can't acknowledge your shadow side, then you're not going to start a new chapter anew, really. You know, like it's sort of like, you know, with nonviolent communication and with, you know, being trauma informed. Like sometimes, and I don't know if you've ever had this happen, but like you can get in an argument with someone about something and then you don't really want to talk about, you know, that argument maybe is rooted in like something that you are holding a grudge about or like some concern you have and you don't really want to go there. So then you just don't talk to that person for a while. And then the next time you see them, you're like, oh, hey, what's up? And you act like nothing happened because you're like, I just don't have the capacity to deal with this. But the thing is, that's not sustainable. That means you're bringing that judgment into the new chapter of your relationship with that person. When the actual sustainable movement forward is about like having a conversation, being real with all of the stuff that happened. And I think of that, you know, like in the current times we're living in, there's more discussion, you know, about reparations, about land back movements. And these are things that are, you know, some people are like, you know, and I go down like YouTube black holes, now TikTok, now that I'm not on Instagram, I'm going down like TikTok black holes about like people that are like, the past is the past, like get over it, you know? And then it's like, okay, but like the past is the shadow. The past is the soil. It's the soil where the seeds are planted. And if you can't amend the soil, you're going to have the same crop over and over again. Going back to Seven of Pentacles, you know, you got to look at that crop and what's in your soil. So when I think about judgment, I think about like, you need to take a hard look. And it's funny because, not funny, haha, funny, like curious. A lot of students, you know, in my Tarot School for Liberation class, I assigned one major arcana per person in the class. And a lot of people that get judgment have said, like, I had to get real about something in my life that was hurting me. And I think that comes up a lot of times in my readings with clients. If judgment comes up, it's like, you know, you don't need to tell me right now. You don't need to say in this reading, but like, you know, you need to think about it because there's something there that you're not dealing with. And if you don't deal with it, it's going to, you know, it gets more control, it takes over more space in your life. So if you deal with it, you know, then you can emerge as like the evolved fool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking, oh, how, what a great pair of judgment and the Seven of Pentacles is actually, because it's being honest about what's there rather than imagining the wonderful apples that you like, being like, is the apple tree growing apples though? Did you plant it correctly? Which is funny because the elevated fool, so I was talking to Corinne about this before we started the podcast, but I do this activity where I look at the major arcana and I see what seems like the elevated aspect of the earlier major arcanas, if anything. I don't even know if the majors are even, so I don't know if this necessarily comes out like that. But I think of the elevated fool as the hanged person, often the hanged man in tarot. And the reason I think that is because the fool is authentically and authentically, genuinely not looking at the bigger picture. That's not within the fool's capacity. They don't have that range of vision or perception. So they legitimately give themselves over to everything they have in the moment. And ideally, through the repetition of moment to moment to moment decisions, they create a pattern that's effective, right? Because it's not necessarily about forgetting with the fool. It's just about what you actually have the capacity for. You give your full capacity and then you give it again. It's not like you don't consider what that capacity did, but that doesn't happen that often in The Fool. But when you get to the Hanged Person, I think you do, because, well, my favorite Hanged Person, I have a bunch of decks open right now. Because, you know, we know the traditional Hanged Person looks like this in the Herbal Tarot. It's someone underwater. In the African American Tarot, it's a medicine person with a bunch of eyes floating around them, which I like. But my favorite one is actually Menzel's Tarot, even though it's not the least traditional, because the Hanged Person is on a string over the globe. For those of you who are just listening and not watching, and there's an Earth and there's a Hanged Person on a rope in the cosmos. And what I really like about it is that I think that the Hanged Person is oftentimes like set in the same circumstances as the Fool. But the difference is that the Hanged Person has a, this isn't exactly the language that I would use if I had thought this out earlier, but like the Hanged Person has like a calculated faith. The Fool has a innate faith. They just trust because they have their experience and that's what they know how to trust. So that's what they throw themselves into. The Hanged Person is like, after a significant amount of day-to-day, moment-to-moment acts, what, with the bigger picture, do we actually want from the trajectory of our choices? And so the Hanged Person is still in a situation where they're not necessarily able to predict what's coming, but they're in a place knowing that that is okay too. The Fool isn't even thinking about what's coming. The Fool's just like, this is in front of me, I'm gonna deal with this. The Hanged Person is like, oh, I see this line of things that I'm set up for. I'm not necessarily knowing how I'm gonna get through it, but I have the Fool's faith and I have a lifetime of experience of surviving my choices. So I'm just gonna go do this. And so the blindfoldedness is a choice. Right? The Fool isn't blind in any of their images, but they're not looking. And then the Hanged Person is looking, but they're blindfolded. And so it's this inversion of, and I think of this too as like the difference between the Knight of Cups and the King of Cups. It's like the Knight of Cups is sincere about what they're doing, but they are learning through osmosis. And so, you know, they can be sincere about loving you one day and sincere about loving somebody else the next day, because they're just going to be honest with you about where they're at in the moment. Whereas the King of Cups has lived that Knight of Cups experience and is now cultivating a particular emotional lifestyle and intending for something. And that doesn't mean that they don't change, but it means that they are aware and calculating how they're making those choices. Whereas the Knight is like, I have to live this to know it. It's through osmosis. And, you know, usually the Knights are through osmosis. So I think of the Hanged Person as like, okay, now that I've lived all that experience, I can take a seat or I can hang out and consider what all those choices actually are leading me into. And that's, I guess, why I like the Menzel's one so much, because it's like, how you conduct yourself in the world, how you make your way around the world, how you go through the world. And I think that even though it's scary to, in an ableist culture, to be without a sense that the culture has so made life, you know, dependent around, that once you realize you can navigate that way, you almost wonder what else that humanity gave you that you can navigate with or without. And then you're really calculating in the same way that you are in the Seven of Cups, but you're doing it from a place of spiritual awareness as opposed to emotional, you know, feelings at the time, which I think the Seven of Cups can be more about, like, what do you feel now? And the Hanged Person is like, oh, I'm going to have another Seven of Cups moment after this Fool's journey. And so I've got to consider what I chose last time so I can decide what I want for this time. So I feel like the Hanged Person, the Fool is each generation, and the Hanged Person is seven generations. Ideally, by the seventh generation, you're able to understand what the first seven, the first six were doing and why you are where you are, even if you don't know where you're going, which is why you're still blindfolded.
Interesting. And I also like that the Menzel's Tarot depiction of the person hanging over the earth, because it's like, it made me think about, like I said, a couple nights ago, I listened to the Tarot for Liberation episode that we did, and listening to you talking about the world and how like the world encompasses everything. So it's like the Hanged One is like, it almost in that one, it's like the airplane is like bringing the person down to the world, you know, like it's like that halfway point.
Yes, so good.
And I also think like, because like some of the things that we've been talking about with like this disconnect between like people's beliefs and their actions, that is Hanged One too. Cause it's like the people are who are like, whatever, we're not gonna run out of water. Like, we're not gonna run out of water. Like, forest fires will end. Like, everything's gonna be fine. Like, that is like, when are you gonna realize that like, we have to make changes as a society? And that will be, you know, that kind of reminds me of the Hanged One, is like being in denial about some things, or like being in cognitive dissonance about some things.
Yes.
Okay. So my last card, and I keep forgetting to say, I like took this time to make flower essence recommendations. So I think for Judgment, Angel's Trumpet was like a big essence I was like making.
Of course.
And there's because there's the Angel's Trumpet in the Judgment card. So I was like, oh, definitely Angel's Trumpet, like heralding us into a new time. And like Angel's Trumpet is, a subspecies of Datura, Devil's Trumpet, which I think of as more like a death or Six of Swords energy. And then I would say Hawthorn. For me as an essence for Judgment, because it's a 10, and like Hawthorn is kind of like a threshold or a gatekeeper. It's also like a really intense essence to work with, y'all. If you like want to know what's holding you back, what's in your heart that's blocking you, Hawthorn's great for that, but like you got to be ready. Then I also put Fuchsia, same thing, like a lot of grief. Fuchsia's in the same family as Bleeding Heart. So anyway, like that's a little addendum. But Seven of Wands, I go off about this card when I teach about it. It's Mars and Leo, which made a lot of sense. I didn't know that before.
That does make lots of sense.
Yeah, because you think about Seven of Wands is like, you know, I relate a lot to this card because I think of it as a trouble or a deficit or a maladaptive pattern in like trying to have a boundary and like it not really working out because the boundary is too defensive. It's too aggressive. It's like, you know, and I think like a lot of us that struggle with codependency or like people pleasing, sometimes you're like nice, you're nice, you're like checking in, you're nice, but you're like getting angry, and then suddenly you're like blah, 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 and then everybody's like, wait, where did that come from? And it's because like you didn't honor that inner boundary or that inner need, so it like built up, you didn't communicate it, and then the Seven of Swords comes out, or I'm sorry, Seven of Wands. So when I see Seven of Wands, the things that I always tell my students is like, look at the way bodies are positioned in the cards. And in the Wands, you know, you see like, it's like this guy with his crew, you know, and they're like having problems, like in the Five, they're having problems, and then the Six, they're acting like everything's great. But then in the Seven, he's like up on the rock above everyone. And it's like, are these your comrades? And if they're your comrades, why are you so distrustful of them? So there's a big story with the Seven of Wands. Seven of Wands is always, you know, when I do the reading, I look for what it shows up with, because it is hinting at a lot of things that are buried. Again, we think shadow or Pluto, you know, what is buried here? What's the story behind this? Because there's something here. And I know you were like, the Seven of Wands can go either way. I have a hard time with a ball Seven of Wands. I have a hard time seeing it in any way that's like super positive. So I'm curious about that from you. But I think Seven of Wands is often about distrust, you know, like fundamental distrust and poor boundaries and not knowing where your boundaries need to go. Defensiveness comes up with Seven of Wands. Like, are you being defensive, like overly so? Are you acting like you're being attacked when you're not? I see this a lot, you know, doing accountability work, doing, you know, we see this with like Karens, you know, like the, you know, all the people getting videotaped, like acting out in ways that are racialized and ways that weaponize privilege and like fragility. That's very Seven of Wands to me, because you think about it and it's like, what is really this about? This is not about this one isolated incident. This is a whole network of stories that are inside of you that you don't understand. So when I see Seven of Wands, I think about like, why, you know, is there some harm that was done to you where now you feel like you have to protect yourself in ways that are so defensive that you're actually keeping out people that are your allies, keeping out people that are your friends, that are your community, your comrades, because you can't trust other people. So to me, Seven of Wands, you know, again, it's like rash, it's fire energy. The essences, I think Yarrow, of course, because there's a boundary thing. And then I think Motherwort, you know, when I do boundary work with people and make essences, Motherwort, I think it comes when you really need to tend to that inner child, when you really need like a hug. You know, there's really like your boundary is there and your distrust is there, but really what you need is like some love from yourself. And then I also put dandelion essence. Dandelion can make you angry. You know, I've heard and I felt that with dandelion because it's a throat chakra opener and it's related to the sun. But sometimes like, you know, the Seven of Wands happens because we're not speaking our truth. We're not setting our boundaries. So it really depends like what the reason that someone's getting the Seven of Wands. Is it because you need a better boundary? Or is it because like you have to learn how to like compassionately and nonviolently communicate or even like cut a cord, you know, with someone who's being toxic to you in some way, or maybe you're the toxic one. You know, I think that's like Judgment and Seven of Wands are like, you know, am I the toxic one in this situation? Or like, are both people toxic? So all of those things are like questions that come up for me with Seven of Wands.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. I was looking through the traditional tarots to see it's funny. The reason I think the seven, it can go both ways is because the Six of Wands is like really deceptive. You know, we're coming in from some win, some lull in the battle. Are you the friend or the foe? Were you the antagonizer? We don't know. We just know that you said you were going to get something done and seemingly you did. And yet when we get to the seven, you didn't really resolve the issue because now you're behind a new barrier. Then we get to the eight and you're like launching shit. And then we get to the nine and you built even bigger defenses. And then by the time you get to 10, it's burdensome oppression. And I think that the seven is interesting because it's like the moment, the reason that can be positive is it's like, you know, sometimes maybe you are fighting for the wrong team. And so the seven is like, oh shit, was I with the oppressors? Cause I gotta reassess. I don't trust these motherfuckers. Like, why was I rolling with these people? Because even in the five, like basically when you leave 1, 2, 3, 4, by the time you get to five, it's like you fell in with some people and maybe they were the right people and maybe not. Six would give short-term gains. We're thinking, oh yes, like I've solved my issues with myself and the world. And then at seven, you're like, did I now? And then you just go, and then you just like tumble down the mountain of anxieties. So I think of the seven as kind of good in the same way as the tower, where you're like, you didn't really need to be rolling with those people. And the fact that you are extracting yourself is necessary. Like you need that deduction. Ideally, you just don't carry that behavior to the next community. With the sevens, but I think I always love that angle. Like the Ten of Swords is bad, but I'm like, but is it though? It's kind of good. It's a good hurt. I think the Seven of Wands is a good check. Yeah. Where you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm the hero that everyone's making me out to be. Mm-hmm. In fact, these might be like my enemies around me now that I'm thinking about it. Which brings me actually to my last two cards can kind of go together. Ironically, the moon and the devil, although I originally had told Karina pan. So some decks have pan, some decks have the devil. I've seen a rare deck that has both. But I'll talk about the moon first because of what I just said about the Seven of Wands. You know, the moon is always present, right? It's the intelligence that we ignore the most, our intuitive intelligence, which I think is a combination of all your other intelligences combined. It's when you're allowing your erotic, physical, intellectual, emotional intelligence to work as a team, a cohesive team that's progressing you through your personality and helping you develop your character. And then the moon is there to sort of help you feel it out. So I think of the moon, of course, as intuition, but like, you have to have intuition in times of crisis. You, well, first of all, you just do. But like, if you listen to your intuition, it can really get you onto that Six of Swords boat when you were in the midst of something much more chaotic. And I also think of the moon as necessary when we're at that Seven of Chalices moment. Like, you know, you can choose any of them. Why do you choose what you choose? You can choose it on personal history. You can choose it based on what other people are telling you to do, or you can sit there and use your gut and be like, I don't know why I'm picking this chalice, but I'm going to go with this chalice because I feel something, not based on my personal history, but just I have a sense that this is what I need to do. And it's that energy, that intuition that allows you to trust in what seems like the impossible, right? Like a better earth, a society that gets along, the end of the Holocaust, the end of a war, right? Like these are the things, the Underground Railroad. It's like without the moon, that luminous body that guides you through means, like through vibes, through things you don't understand, you're probably not going to make these brave decisions. You're not going to help someone on the Underground Railroad. You're not going to help someone get out of Germany during Holocaust because you don't, one, you don't have faith. Two, you're not going off of the idea that like something is prompting you to make that move. Intuition is like something with from outside of me that is connected to me is prompting me to do this, right? Like it's like when you walk into a store before we ever read cards, and of all the things in the store, we're staring at the cards. Like that's intuition being like, hey, you want to check out those fucking cards? And so I think you need that as impetus. I feel like the moon is there to get you to fall over the precipice. It gets you over that five. It gets you from the fives of the plateau to the six of being in the action somehow, some way. Like even the six of wands, right? It's like, I did something. and you need the moon to sort of feel invigorated, justified. I often think of the moon in relationship with judgment because it's a different kind of like religion. I think of judgment in affiliation with religion because of how it's been implemented. But I think the moon is, you know, let's say you're a pagan. It was like before judgment, there was the moon and you had this other means of deciding things. And then why I chose Pan is because, you know, we're in a pandemic. I was saying to Karina, Pan puts the pan in pandemic. And you need this. I mean, even the devil, right? Like in Ifa, the traditional indigenous practice of the Yoruba people of Nigeria, which is one of my practices outside of Taoism. There's two things I really like about the devil, what has become the devil archetype, which is Eshu in Ifa. So Eshu is a trickster. Eshu rules the crossroads as an archetypal energy. He reminds you that there are options and also teaches you in retrospect that there were even more options than you knew you were choosing. And usually Eshu will show up in an archetypal story as the entity that challenges if you know what you know. Because the ego will be like, oh, I am this and I am that. And then Eshu will come through to test the viability of that statement. And so Pan is a disruptor, but what Pan disrupts is illusion. Because what you imagine it is, it would be if it was that. And so if it doesn't end up that way, that's not what it was. Another thing I really like about Ifa is that in Ifa, the shadow is an entity, it's an archetype, and you agreed, you and the shadow agreed to come to Earth. The shadow agrees to be your witness so that when you return to Olodumare, heaven, whatever, the after place, the shadow holds you accountable. So all the things that you were in denial of, all the things that you were going to skirt around saying to God, the shadow's like, and then this motherfucker did this, and then they did this, and then I saw them do this, and then they did this, and then they did that. So the shadow completes you because it allows you to, it is the witness of the things that you do that you don't want to acknowledge. And so it's not an evil entity. If anything, it's your accountant. And it's in all those places that you think you're alone and no one's watching you. And it's the shadow, AKA the devil, Pan, that's there with you as a witness being like, I see you. Mm. I see what you're doing. So the reason that, I mean, one, obviously collapse, crisis, war, these are the details of the devil, the details of Pan. And also just Pan being like young, masculine, immature energy. You know, you think of Peter Pan. It's like someone who just wants to do what they want to do, but not alone. They want everyone to do it with them. And then when challenged, might become manipulative to make sure that everyone participates whether they want to or not. And then, you know, oftentimes ends up like a Rumpelstiltskin. But it's like their nature, right? Rumpelstiltskin isn't like, we don't know the rest of his story. We just know he turned straw into gold for babies. He's honest. He's like, I will help you, but I need your firstborn child. So Pan and the devil, they're not dishonest. They're quite honest. But if you're not as honest as them, then the situation that they create for you is going to be more chaotic. Like, as soon as you're faced with the shadow, you should be like, okay, this is what I did. And this is what we're doing now. And then you're actually at the maturity level to have the conversation at the level it's actually being had by that archetypal energy. Whereas if you're not willing to be accountable, then it just all looks like chaos because it was the stuff you were ignoring the whole time. And so I like this energy and I appreciate this energy because in a free will society, in a choosing will society, you do need that element of option, direction, seeming direction. But then that intuition is there even further above Pan, luminous body in the sky, to cast more light on those decisions that are done in the dark, so to speak, which I think is the Pan and the devil aspect. So I like them together as a team because one seems like it's there to disrupt, the other seems like it's there to clarify, and yet they can trade roles, you know, because we can be lunatics as well.
Mm-hmm. I love how you just combined those two cards, because a lot of people think of the moon as like a malefic card, which I don't know. Next year is my moon year, so I hope to like go deeper into that. But I do, maybe it's just my Capricorn nature, but I do love the devil. I think the devil, and it's kind of like what you said about Seven of Swords or Seven of Wands. It's like some of these cards that are more considered malefic are actually, you know, and that's what I say to my, like, you know, my clients. I don't want to give anyone like a happy-go-lucky feel-good reading because like, then I'm like, you're just wasting your money. Like, do you want to get to the root of it? You know? So I love that. How can folks get in touch with you? Do you have any new awesome offerings?
Yes. I'm probably going to close that offering. I was thinking about doing my spell services, which is helping people understand what their business were, like the language behind their business ethos and their business name actually means. I did it last year in winter and I was going to do it in winter and summer, but I actually just realized I'm probably only going to do it once a year. So hold on that. I will have spell services in the winter, but right now, yes, I have, my readings are always open. You can go to my website, sanyuestelle.com, sanyuestelle.com. Had to think about how I spell my middle name real quick. And then I am teaching at Witch's Confluence this winter. Tickets are currently open for sale. I will be teaching a workshop I've only taught in my Dreamscapes cohort called Multidimensionality and Time Space. The byline is, that's not your past life and there's no single soulmate. And so I talk to people about multidimensionality and time space and why that isn't a past life, because all time exists at once, and why that isn't, there is no single soulmate, because we're in a free will universe, and there's no guarantee that the people you made agreements with in spirit have made those decisions when they're incarnate on Earth, so you cannot be reliant upon one person. So that's the cheat, if you guys want to know the short story, but I explain it on, with all kinds of like charts and things. So that's happening Halloween weekend, and tickets are on sale now at witchesconfluence.com, so you guys can get that. There's many tiered tickets, including tickets that are completely comped for those who are of the demographics suggested, that are the needful demographics. And then other than that, it's such a strange time for our line of business. Like, I wish I had more things to tell you about what I was doing, but like, I'm not outside yet because I don't really know what that's out, what's that like with the Delta variant. I'm trying, but I'm enjoying doing one-on-one readings in a way that before I didn't enjoy as much. I think in 2019, when I thought we were going to be outside, I imagined I would be coming away from one-on-one readings and doing more group work, but obviously COVID does not lend itself to group work in person. Other than that, we have my Patreon, and actually that's the easiest way to work with me one-on-one, because I have a $10 group of cards and channeling meetup, and you can meet once a month and ask me whatever questions you want and get information from the group, and even get questions answered. It's like the cheapest way to get a reading. And the easiest way, if you want like any more of my insight on card perspectives or on tarot or how I read, that's the easiest way to get into my school. I don't have an official school like Corinna, but if you join my Patreon, you have more of that kind of energy. But yeah, readings, which is Confluence, my Patreon, and then in October, I will be starting my fall Dreamscapes cohort with Tara of the Witch's Muse, and that's for all people who want to become more aware dreamers, if you have sleep terrors, if you have, you know, what is it called? When you freeze when you're sleeping? Paralysis. If you have sleep paralysis, if you're someone who believes you are plagued by nightmares, or if you have dream guides and stuff that you want to become better at talking to, that's what my Dreamscapes workshop's for. And that starts in October. So just join my newsletter on my website and you'll be updated on all the things.
Awesome. And I'll have all those things linked in the show notes. Well, thank you. You're basically, I was like, Stan, you is basically like co-host of the Rise of Good Witch podcast. thank you for, like coming back after my sabbatical and doing.
Oh, it's such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch, where a pledge of $5 or more per month gets you access to extra content and helps support the production of the show. And go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review. You can also check out the website for tarot readings and apothecary and other offerings. Thanks so much, y'all. See you next time.